Hi, this is David Wood. Welcome back to Wood on Words, the podcast for all things writing and publishing. This is episode 20. And hey, it's awesome to get to 20, especially after I had that long gap in the late fall, early winter. But it's nice to be back and recording and talking about publishing, which is one of my favorite things. Today was one of those days in which I almost wimped out and didn't record. And it's not because I'm not having fun doing it, but I'm just really busy, like we all get sometimes. I am in the process of writing the next Dane Matic book. I just finished the final edits for Neptune's Key and took care of all of that. But today in particular, the next thing that's a big priority is working on my next pass over the next Jake Crowley book, Anubis Key. Alan Baxter, my co-author, sent me back his manuscript. He'd made two passes over it after my outline and story beats. And I got that from him on Monday, on the same day that I got back the edits on Neptune. So I spent yesterday addressing Neptune's Key, and then today, well, I got a chapter done on Anubis Key yesterday. But today was a big day to work on Anubis Key. However, in the time that I was waiting for those two projects to come back to me, I got a very nice start on the next Dane Matic book. It's already outlined, all the story beats are done, and I really saw no reason to completely stop it and get out of the flow of the story. So my goal has been each day to at least write for 8 minutes on it. And 8 minutes is a funny thing. I think we'll do a whole episode on it. But basically, it's such a small amount of time that it feels like nothing. And you can actually get a lot of words down if you already know what you want to write that day. And what I found is, as long as I do 8 minutes, I'll do another eight, and then I'll just keep writing. So Monday we had family plans, so I did a couple rounds of 8 minutes, got 500 words in. Yesterday, I said to myself, okay, I need to do all the edits on Neptune, and I need to start on Crowley. I'm just going to write for 8 minutes. I wound up doing 1 8-minute, then another, and then just continuing on until I'd knocked out 1,500 words. And today, did the exact same thing. And what I wanted to do was try to get 60 pages passed over on Jake Crowley today. But I wanted to write my Matic chapter. I needed to do a cover for Griffin Wood and take care of some Griffin Wood business. And I needed to do this podcast episode. And my daughter has a ball game tonight. So I wound up compromising and stopping at 40 pages on Neptune's Key. And if I feel like it, I'll do a little more when I come home tonight. Probably not going to happen because her games are so late. But anyway, I do feel better when I get my daily writing done. I could have spent the entire day just on Neptune's Key. Sorry, I should never have had two books back to back with the word key. Anubis Key. I could have spent the entire day working on Anubis Key and put in the exact same amount of work, but I know that I would end the day feeling dissatisfied and discouraged because I didn't create new words for the next Matic book, and I missed my commitment to try to do the weekly podcast. So even though I didn't get quite as many pages done as I would like on that one project, I still feel pretty good about my work day today because I got a lot of things done. So sometimes that might be what you face when you've got more than one thing going on and you want to keep writing. And the things that are interfering with your writing might not even be publishing and writing related. They might just be real life. And in that case, I encourage you to try the 8-minute thing. Maybe two sessions of 8 minutes, but try even one session of 8 minutes as fast as you can. Knock out a couple hundred words. I know people who sit and agonize at their keyboard for hours and only get 800 words. And I'm not talking literary writers who are obsessing over every syllable. And I think the key there is to know ahead of time what you're going to work on, to have your story fully thought out. Doing that has really changed my productivity and really the way I feel about writing. And because the way I do it with a thorough outline and working out all the story beats, all those great moments of discovery, changing my mind, coming up with an even better idea, all the research I need to do, all that gets done in that process. So I still get to have the fun of pantsing my story without it screwing up my productivity when I sit down to actually work on the book. So this has been just so much better for me. I know what I'm going to write. The kinks have already been worked out, and I can just sit down and crank out words very quickly and then move along with my day. So, all in all, good day. Today, I want to talk about sales rankings and sales charts, mostly because time is tight, and I thought this was a topic that would be fun to cover in a brief period of time. And what inspired it is the launching of Amazon's new Amazon charts. And what these are, they are currently just two top 20 lists. Hopefully they're going to expand them. But basically there's the most sold chart and the most read chart for books in the Amazon ecosystem. Now they do already have bestseller charts, but a couple things that make the most sold chart different are, first of all, it covers a 7-day period rather than, and it's only going to be posted once a week. Whereas the bestseller charts are updated hourly and they work a little differently. But the other key difference is this new most sold chart combines all versions of the book. With your regular Amazon charts, your Kindle book has a ranking, your audio book has a ranking, your paper book has a ranking, and your hardcover. In this case, they're combining them all into one. So that sets it apart. And then the most read chart is very interesting because obviously it's not going to include paperbacks, but it's measuring Kindle books as to how many pages are actually read of that book. And it also is culling data from Audible to hear how much people are actually listening. And I think that's fascinating. So, and one of the things I noticed is that with the most read, there are some older books on there, but they're ones that are favorites that people are continuing to read. Now, just a few thoughts on various charts. First of all, with Amazon. Now, aside from these two very new charts, that, as they're calling them, here's some things we know about Amazon sales rankings. First of all, Amazon sales rankings measure units sold regardless of price, not counting free. Free books have their own charts. That wasn't always the case. It used to be you could put a book on free, crank it up the charts, then flip it back over to make it for sale, and suddenly it would be right up at the top. They got rid of that. So it's strictly units sold. But it's, again, regardless of price. If I sell 1,000 books at 99 cents and you sell 800 books at $9.99, I'm going to have a higher ranking than you are. The sales rankings, they are updated hourly. They give heavy emphasis on that day's sales or the previous 24 hours, but they do also measure consecutive days for several days back. Different people will tell you different things about exactly what that means, but basically most of your, it heavily weighs today. It weighs yesterday a good bit less, weighs the day before even less, and so forth. And that's why books that are, that have very low sales, their rankings can be very volatile. If you're only selling one a day, you're going to bounce around in the hundred thousands. If you're only selling one a month, your book's going to fall rapidly, and then it'll bounce up into 100,000s with a single sale, but then fall rapidly again. We know that the sales rankings, and I assume the Amazon charts, also factor in borrows from the Kindle Unlimited program, but we don't know exactly how much weight is given to them. But the assumption is that a borrow is given pretty much the same weight as a single sale, which would make sense because with the borrow, you are paying for it to some degree. And is there really that much difference if you're borrowing a bunch of books for your monthly $9.99 fee and paying 99 cents for a single book or even a book bundle? So, again, we know that Kindle Unlimited does factor, but not exactly how much. As we mentioned, you get different sales rankings for your different versions in the regular sales charts, but not in the one new chart that they've released. We also know, or maybe some people don't know, Amazon has lots and lots of subcategories, each with its own list. And some of the ones that are very minor and very obscure, you can hit number one with a couple of sales in a day. My Kindle Worlds books, Kindle Worlds has its own charts. They're a part of the bigger Amazon charts, but they're also their own ecosystem. So, you know, I can have a book that's one of the tip-top in Kindle Worlds, but, you know, only be charting mediocre in overall Kindle, which is why you can now look around and it seems like every indie author is a Kindle bestseller because they sold 5 books to their friends one day, and they got up to number 10 on some little obscure chart. Now, going back to these, the most read charts, which I find really interesting, I mentioned that some old books are showing up. There were 5 Harry Potter books in the top 20 most read books on Amazon, which is interesting. It shows you that, at least in the Amazon ecosystem, a lot of people, some people are discovering Harry Potter for the first time, or they're reaching the age where they're finally old enough to discover him. But also, a lot of people are returning to these old favorites and reading them. And what I'm curious about is, if I bought a Harry Potter book on Kindle years ago and I go back and reread it, is that going to get factored in, or is it only people who are making new purchases? It sounds to me like anything read on Kindle is going to factor in. So it's really cool to see that the old favorites and the books people love are getting some weight. It's also cool because if somebody buys a new book but doesn't read it, maybe they just picked it up because they heard about it, that's not going to get factored in. Or if someone buys a new book, starts to read it, and abandons it because they didn't enjoy it, that's going to be considered too. And sometimes a lot of these major bestseller lists, their top rankings are being clogged with novelty books and celebrity co-authored books that might or might not even be getting read. Books that got heavy promotion are tied into popular media that are big at the moment, but they might not necessarily reflect books that people are actually picking up and reading. So I think this most read chart is really cool. And as I said, I hope they continue to expand it beyond a top 20, especially if you're going to have older titles that are clogging a lot of the spots. One of the things that drives me bananas about some of these Amazon charts is I want to get visibility in things like the action adventure charts and the men's adventure. And it drives me crazy when the top spots in action adventure are being taken up by fantasy books like Game of Thrones and Harry Potter. Yes, those books have action and adventure in them, but action adventure is a specific genre. And those books don't fit. They shouldn't be there. Romance and erotica books that happen to have some action and adventure in them, again, it's not the appropriate fit. And especially when you've got, you know, all the Game of Thrones books, plus Game of Thrones bundles taking up spots, then different versions of those, and all the Harry Potter books and things like that. But it also shows you how freaking popular those books still are, that they're still outselling a lot of brand new indie authors, for example. Now, as we're talking about Amazon rankings, there's also some misinformation or unconfirmed wisdom that's always going around about the Amazon rankings. And a lot of times people conflate sales rankings with the algorithms, which are what we term those mysterious engines and things that decide how and where to recommend books to Amazon customers. So a couple things to remember. Again, unit price is not factored into rankings. Some people used to believe that a higher priced book was going, if it sold roughly the same number of copies, would get a higher ranking than a 99-cent book. That's just not true. If you do a 99-cent book promo and you move 3,000 copies, you will, at least temporarily, outrank a $14.99 traditional published book that sells 2,000 copies. It's purely units moved, as long as they're paying something for it. Book reviews are not factored into your sales rankings. If you have more book reviews, that constitutes social proof, and people might be a little bit more likely to buy your book, which will in turn affect your rankings. But that number that shows your sales rank, book reviews are not part of it. And despite many rumors to the contrary, I have yet to see any evidence that Amazon is artificially suppressing the rankings of quote-unquote wide books, meaning ebooks that are available on the other vendors. I don't see any evidence that those sales rankings are being suppressed in favor of books that are part of Kindle Unlimited. That's a rumor that has gone around, but I think what happened is people were sharing sales figures, and they say, wait a minute, I sold 1,000 on Kindle. He sold 950 on Kindle today, but he's ranked higher than me. But the 950 person also had borrows, and those page reads and borrows are being factored in some way. And I think that's what might have accounted for some of the people thinking that there was an artificial suppression going on. Now, whether or not Amazon is more favorable in terms of recommendations for people who are exclusive, I can't say for sure, but it does seem to me that sales numbers are still the biggest thing. That's what's going to shoot you up the charts. That's what's going to put you into the also bots. Now, let's talk about some of the other lists, because some people are hoping these Amazon charts will take the place of these lists. First of all is the New York Times list. This one is arguably the most prestigious list in the U.S., maybe in the world. I don't know how people view it. But some things to consider, and there are actually a lot of things we could say, but I'm going to keep this really brief. The New York Times doesn't necessarily rank the best-selling books in the United States. It pretty much does, but there are a couple other factors. First of all, the list is curated, meaning they collect sales data from select vendors. They make their rankings, but then they subjectively cull the list. And there are indie authors who have been removed for whatever reason. There are book bundles that have been removed. And I kind of understand. New York Times looks at a list and they see that, you know, Dan Brown has sold X number of thousands of books at $19.99, and this 20-author indie collection with 20 books in it for 99 cents with 8 million different types of promos has sold as many as Dan Brown. Well, obviously that's not apples to apples there. But it is kind of disappointing. There was a time at which it did seem to be pure sales, and I know some indies who hit the New York Times list either on their own because they enjoyed great success or as part of one of these box set initiatives, and now that doesn't really seem to be happening much anymore. So it is difficult. But anyway, it is possible that an indie author in any given week could outsell a lot of the authors on the New York Times list and still be excluded. You just don't have any control over that. Another thing to consider is that the list can be skewed by bookstores who place large orders of paperbacks or hardcovers of a new book, but then those books don't necessarily get sold. Many get returned. So that's another thing that can impact what the New York Times list reflects. That doesn't change its prestige, but a lot of people criticize it because they don't feel it's truly a level playing field and that it might not necessarily reflect the true best-selling books. Now, USA Today is another list to consider, and this is the one that nowadays an indie author has the best chance of hitting. It's considered a fairer and more accurate reflection of best-selling books than New York Times. It's a top 150 rather than 100, and its rankings are based on actual unit sales using data from bookstores and the online retailers. It's still problematic in a couple of ways. First of all, for Kindle-only authors, USA Today requires a minimum number. People are guessing it's around 500 sales in a given week from one other vendor. You might get 4,000 from Amazon, but if you don't get a certain number from one of the vendors that reports to them, you won't be considered for the USA Today list, unless it's changed very recently, but it's my understanding that that is still the case. So you're going to have to be wide in order to hit that list. And you're going to have to put forth the effort to sell well on at least one other platform. Normally, if you can get a BookBub deal, that's going to take care of itself. And, you know, maybe stack some other reviews. And so let's talk about hitting the lists, because that's been a big thing more in years past than now. People are still trying it. But making a concerted effort or a specific effort to get onto the USA Today list, and previously to also get on the New York Times. Now, the strategy is to typically create a boxed set because that's going to give you greater sales potential. So maybe I've done 4 book bundles. I'll usually do 3, for example, Dane Maddock books, and then put in a bonus novella. I did the David DeBord trilogy, put in a bonus short story. So you put together a box of however many books you want, and then you stack as many promotions as you can. You load up on, you know, not just, you schedule your BookBub, because that's the biggie, hopefully early in the week so you can enjoy that long tail of sales throughout the sales period that USA Today is measuring. Then you just load up on any other list that you can get that has some promotional value. And you load up on Facebook ads, and you use Amazon ads, and you do the, if you're in the book beta, you use their other ads. And you try to stack it all together, get as many people as you can to spread the word, set your price down at 99 cents, and just try to move enough units to hit that list. And some indies have managed to do it individually. Others have done it as part of a group effort. That one can be tougher nowadays because BookBub no longer will advertise multi-author boxed sets. But it's still something that people do quite a bit. Some authors have lost a lot of money trying to, quote-unquote, earn the letters. Some of them hit the list and it eventually pays for itself. They feel like they see increase in sales. But that is the most common way for an author to hit the list. I do know some who have managed to hit it just because they're super popular indie authors. They put out a new book and it hits the list. And that's amazing when they do that. Because as much as authors will complain about the unfairness of, say, the New York Times list curating, I can also see the other side of the coin, as we mentioned earlier. Where is the fairness in somebody, you know, 20 authors combining their efforts in a 20-book bundle for 99 cents versus an author who's hitting the chart with a single book? So it's definitely subjective, and there are wrinkles to consider. But most common way is to either do your own box set and load up on your promotional efforts, or to join forces with a bunch of other authors, create a big box set, and pool your financial resources and your platforms and try to hit the list that way. Something to watch out for, and I could go on and on about this, but I don't want to delve too deeply into it. If you're following what's going on in the indie world and following some forums, there's one particular author who has come under fire lately for some really sketchy practices in terms of box sets, charging substantial amounts of money for participation and using a combination of perfectly valid and legitimate techniques and some that are absolutely not legitimate whatsoever, such as encouraging all the authors to go out on every platform and buy the set on every one of them, and even trading promo in or future promo in exchange for buying all these books, and doing a lot of other things that are not ethical that I don't have time to really get into, and I'm not sure I could fully explain. I think if you did some Google for unethical box sets, you'll probably find this person. And also, one of the funny things is there are true believers who are defending this person to the hilt, but this person, the name this person is doing business under isn't even her actual name. She used to do it under another name, came under fire for sketchy practices, and has started over under a new name. So I'm just going to say, watch out for sketchy box set promoters. Find out the experiences of others. There have been situations with this particular author where someone will pull out of the box set because they find out about some of the unethical things that are going on, or they found out that some of the things this promoter was doing were violations of, say, Amazon's terms of service, and the person who pulls out has suddenly had a deluge of one-star reviews because this box set promoter, it's kind of like a high school mean girl situation, will go online and post about them and trash them and encourage people to go after them. So be careful who you do business with and watch out for these box set promotions. If you do one, make sure you're working with legitimate people who have used good practices. So buyer beware. Now let's talk about what it means for an author to hit the bestseller list. Well, it depends on the author and what they're shooting for. For some people, it's a bucket list item. They want to hit the list just once. For some, it marks a level of achievement, and they're very proud of what they've done. For some, it's a marketing strategy. It's nice to be able to put New York Times bestseller or USA Today bestseller on your cover and use it as part of your promotional material. It's a very nice stamp of approval. There's one indie author in my genre who puts New York Times bestseller in gigantic letters on all of his covers, so large that it dwarfs his book title and author name. And I guess it's working out for him, but that is an option. And, you know, do readers care? Maybe. It depends on the reader, but I'm sure at least some notice. So the big question comes when we're talking about hitting these bestseller charts. Is it worth spending thousands of dollars in order to hit the list? Well, it depends on who you ask. Some authors have made so much money that they don't mind spending it. And obviously you can write it off because it's all marketing and promotion for your business. Some authors say that they saw such an increase in sales once they were able to put that bestseller stamp on, and they saw increased long tail sales after they hit the list, that it was absolutely worth it and more than paid for itself. Some authors say no, it didn't pay for itself and it didn't prove to be worth it, at least from a financial standpoint. Some people feel that it's worth it just to be able to have that title, New York Times bestseller or USA Today bestseller, even though it might not have paid for itself in the end. It just feels so good to have it. Other authors have confided in me privately that it felt good at first, but then they started thinking about the reality that, you know what, I was part of this giant box set, and we really only sold because this person are hugely popular and they use their platform, and we sold 12 books for 99 cents. And so it was kind of a hollow achievement. It felt good, and you know, obviously they still use that moniker, New York Times bestseller, but deep down it doesn't feel quite the same as if they had done it on their own. I don't know how I would feel were I in that situation. I would absolutely use the label New York Times bestseller if I were part of a box set that hit it big. How I would feel about it, I'm not sure, but I'd still use it. One thing I am certain of in today's environment is that the term bestseller, it's becoming more ubiquitous and less valuable by the day. Being an Amazon bestseller, it's not a big deal anymore. And now that so many people are becoming New York Times bestsellers by virtue of these box sets and these special sales, that doesn't mean as much anymore. And I've heard a lot of readers saying they don't notice anymore because it seems like everybody is some kind of bestseller. But I do think there's probably still some value. What I do believe, and I'm confident about this, is that if you do it right, if you do the things we've been talking about on this show, great book cover, engaging product description, a well-written book, especially the sample that people can download, appropriate price point, effective marketing strategies, and consistently publishing, you don't need that bestseller label in order to succeed. So if you have the resources, you want to go for it, go for it. It can be a lot of fun to try to hit the lists. And that's awesome if you make it. A lot of my friends have made it, and it was fun for them. So I would not discourage you, but I also want to say if you don't have the money to put into it, or it's just not something you're shooting for, or if you've tried and failed, it's not that big a deal as long as you're putting out great books and doing the other things right. So don't let it get you down. So that wound up being a longer episode than I had anticipated. I didn't think I'd go this long. But anyway, I hope everybody is having a great writing week. I'm going to get back to all of my many life's obligations, and hopefully when we're back together next week, I'll be able to say that I have sent Anubis Key off to the beta readers. That's my goal. One thing I want to mention is that I'm doing a Goodreads giveaway of 2 advanced reader copies of Neptune's Key. So if you want to go to the Wood on Words blog, you can see a link if you want to enter that giveaway. So I hope you'll check it out. That comes out on May 31st. So until next time, happy writing, and we will see you soon.